death. Our human race, now satisfactorily comprised equally of males and females, bred and spread about the world, building cities and establishing nation-states. Ships and chariots, cottages and castles, culture and commerce, merchants and markets, farming and finance, weapons and wheat. In short, civilization began. It was an age of kings, queens, princes and princesses, of hunters, warriors, shepherds, potters and poets. An age of empires, slaves, warfare, trade and treaties. An age of votive offerings, sacrifices and worship. Towns and villages chose their favourite gods and goddesses to be guardian deities, patrons and protectors. The immortals themselves were not shy to come down in their own forms, or in the forms of humans and animals, to have their way with such humans as appealed to them, or to punish those that aggravated them, and reward those that most fawned on them. The gods never tired of flattery. Perhaps most importantly, the plague of sorrows that had flown from Pandora's jar ensured that from this point onwards, humanity would have to face the inevitability of death in all its forms. Sudden death, slow lingering death, death by violence, death by disease, death by accident, death by murder, and death by divine decree. The god Hades found, to his great delight, or the closest to delight that gloomy god could ever manage, that the shades of more and more dead humans began to arrive at his subterranean kingdom. Hermes was assigned a new role, that of arch-psychopomp, or chief conductor of souls, a duty he discharged with his customary sprightliness and puckish humour. Though, as the human population grew, only the most important dead were granted the honour of a personal escort by Hermes, the rest were taken by Thanatos, the grim, forbidding figure of death. The instant the human spirits departed their bodies, Hermes or Thanatos would lead them to the underground cavern where the river Styx, hate, met the river Acheron, woe. There, the grim and silent Charon held out his hand to receive his payment for ferrying the souls across the Styx. If the dead had no payment to offer, they would have to wait on the bank 100 years before the disobliging Charon consented to take them. To avoid this limbo, it became a custom amongst the living to place some money, usually an obolus, on the tongue of the dying to pay the ferryman and assure safe and swift passage. Not to be confused with the dagger-shaped punctuation mark, the obelus, this monetary piece was a spit or rod of copper and bronze, not like a coin at all, as we think of them. When I was young, its value was equated to our old British halfpenny. There were 6 to a drachma, though originally a rather more casual and appealing handful of obols went to 1 drachma. 6 was apparently the most of these rods you could clutch in one hand. Charon was also happy to receive a danake, or danes, the Persian equivalent, later incorporated into Greek currency. When he had taken his fee, the ugly, long-bearded Charon would pull the dead soul aboard and pull his rust-covered punt or skiff over the black Stygian waters to the disembarkation stage, hell's muster point. Virgil's description of Aeneas's visit to the underworld tells of the punt's colour. Once dead, no mortal could return to the upper world. Immortals, if they tasted so much as a morsel of food or drink in Hades, were fated to return. And what was their final destination? It seems that this rather depended on the kind of life they had led. At first, Hades himself was the arbiter, but in later years he delegated the great weighing up to the 3 sons of Zeus and Europa, Minos, Rhadamanthus, and Aeacus, who, after their own deaths, were appointed judges of the underworld. They decided whether an individual had lived a heroic, average, or punishably wicked life. The heroes, and those deemed exceedingly righteous, as well as the dead who had some divine blood in them, found themselves transported to the Elysian Fields, which lay somewhere on the archipelago known as the Fortunate Isles, or Isles of the Blessed. There is no real agreement as to where this might actually be. Perhaps they are what we now call the Canaries. The Canaries were Byron's candidate for the Isles of the Blessed in his Don Juan. Perhaps the Azores, the Lesser Antilles, or even Bermuda. Later descriptions place the Elysian Fields within the Kingdom of Hades itself, but not in France, despite the name of Paris's grand thoroughfare, the Champs-Élysées. In these accounts, souls who reincarnated three times, leading a heroic, just, and virtuous life each time, then earned themselves a transfer from Elysium to the Isles of the Blessed. The blameless majority, whose lives were neither especially virtuous nor especially vicious, might expect to be parked for eternity in the meadows of Asphodel, whose name derived from the white flowers that carpeted its fields. These souls were guaranteed a pleasant enough afterlife. Before they arrived, they drank the waters of forgetfulness from the river Lethe, so that a blithe and bland eternity could be passed, untroubled by upsetting memories of earthly life. But the sinners, the debauched, blasphemous, wicked, and dissolute, what of them? The least of them flitted in the halls of Hades eternally without feeling, strength, or any real consciousness of their existence, but the most profane and unpardonable were taken to the fields of punishment, which lay between the meadows of Asphodel and the abysmal depths of Tartarus itself. Here, tortures that fitted their crimes with diabolical exactness were inflicted on them for all eternity. We will meet some of the more celebrated of these sinners at a later date, names like Sisyphus, Ixion, and Tantalus still ring through the ages. While Homer describes the spirits of the departed as keeping the faces and appearance they had in life, alternative accounts tell of a hideous demon called Eurynomos, who met the dead and, like the Furies, stripped the flesh from their bones. Other poets suggest that the souls of the underworld were capable of speech and given to relating their life stories to each other. Hades was the most jealous of all his jealous family. Not one soul could he bear to lose from his kingdom. Cerberus, the three-headed dog, patrolled the gates. Few, very few, heroes circumvented or duped Thanatos and Cerberus and managed to visit Hades' realm and return alive to the world above. And so, death became a constant in human life, as it remains to this day. But the world of the Silver Age, it should be understood, was very different from our own. Gods, demigods, and all kinds of immortals still walked amongst us. Intercourse of the personal, social, and sexual kind with the gods was as normal to men and women of the Silver Age as intercourse with machines and AI assistants is to us today, and, I dare say, a great deal more fun.